we could be great together. I mean, we were great together. Do you remember how great we used to be together? And we could be great again together. Greatness can be ours.
She wants
greatness.
Us all to do a 90210 reboot.
What she said.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This. Beverly Hill. No, BH90210. Almost got me, but you didn't. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 2, The Pitch. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here with my extra deep, sexy, cold voice to talk about The Pitch.
I'm here with my usual extra deep, variably sexy voice to talk about it as well. And then there's Dave. And then there's Dave.
Are we ready to talk about The Pitch?
I think so.
All right, let's get into it. The B plot, very brief. Everyone improbably has to go to court to defend themselves on the various Vegas charges from the season premiere. Even more improbably, they haven't tried to separate their cases, and we don't see even one lawyer, but whatever. They each have to do 50 hours of community service, and Tori not only has to pay the owner of the dress she stole $100,000 in damages, but also return it unlaundered. Gross.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have questions about that.
We do.
We'll get into it. On for now to the A-plot. Tori and Jenny have decided to go ahead with their reboot idea. Fox loves it and is prepared to run with it because, of course, they wouldn't even try to pitch it if the whole cast wasn't on board, right? Wrong. So now they have to scramble and bribe their co-stars to get on board.
Yes. Gabby, who tells Jason about kissing the bartender in Vegas and suggests that she's been queer all along, wants Andrea to explore her sexuality. She ends up telling her husband about the update to the character, and though the camera cuts away, it's implied she goes on to tell him why recent events made her pitch that change.
Jenny's daughter, Kyler, wants to start acting. Jenny refuses to let her do it until she's 18, but when Kyler presents her with emancipation papers from where? Don't look down. Jenny first backs out of the reboot to spend more time with Kyler and then decides she'll do it if they cast Kyler so she can learn what the work is actually like.
Brian gets offered a part in a movie because producers want one of Shay's songs, and she said they could have it if they hired him. He doesn't want to ride her coattails, but Tori and Shannon both tell him to get over himself, and he does. His condition for signing on to the reboot, which will work around his movie schedule, is that they all be equal partners behind the scenes. His stalker, who has a literal cop procedural crazy wall, of course, overhears Brian tell Shay he's going to need an assistant, and the stalker then applies for the job.
Jason, meanwhile, will sign on if he gets to direct the pilot, which, by the way, he did not do in real life. But first, he has to eat shit and play a totally masked villain on Not the Flash. Opposite the kid he punched, which is this a burn on Ian Ziering playing a totally masked villain on Swamp Thing? Said kid goes on to kick him in the nards after cut, so congrats to him for living our dream. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to him, Camille got a surprise visit from Hilo from Battlestar Galactica about a secret he's keeping, so it's no surprise to us when, at the end of the episode, Jason hears from his doctor that he's basically infertile. It is slightly surprising that Hilo turns out to be Jack Carlisle, the writer Tori's hired for the show, thanks to his blackmailing Camille to make it happen.
Yeah, this is the soapiest storyline for sure. Although there's also this. Ian still hasn't confronted Stacy, although he has set up dozens of hidden cameras to capture her cheating, which is apparently frequent. Apart from that, Ian's mind is on his entrepreneurial pursuits. He wants to launch a beauty line with Tori and product place it on the show. No mention of the pyramid scheme aspect of this venture in their real lives, though.
Tori has to battle Nate's doubts about her competence to make the whole cast get on board, but she uses her amazing producing skills, honed from her years herding her brood of children, to get it done. She's proudly recounting her journey to Nate before she notices he's asleep because Nate sucks.
Shannon is back in LA, but she's rescuing sea lions and ignoring Tori's calls.
Also back, Christine Emily Valentine Elise, who's now the Fox executive who will be working on their show and thinks group therapy, which Gabby has suggested they all do, is a great idea.
As soon as everyone except Shannon signs on, each is delivered the action figure version of him or herself that's been assaulted or dismembered. But who did it?
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, we have questions. There's one occurred to me while we were doing the rundown that I didn't think to put in the doc, which is, how is this group therapy thing going to work? Will it be extremely offensive and a terrible view of therapy, or will they actually show it being helpful, I wonder?
I think given this reboot, which is like trying to have it both ways and occasionally not failing at that, it could. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be both.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's going to be like a pretty offensive take on group therapy that actually is probably going to work for some members of the cast, but hard to say. Like, as with everything else on the show, it's like I don't really understand what they're doing until I see it, and even mm-hmm. then I'm like, what is this? So yeah, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I wonder about this too with regard to the Jenny storyline, because she describes her experience on the show as traumatic, and we'll talk about this more later too, but I'm curious to know like how that will play into like specifically what she has in mind when she says that, and whether she will like blame that on her co-stars or what it actually means for her. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really either. I mean, again, I did read her memoir.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I remember it line for line, obviously, but I don't recall what trauma she's talking about.
Yeah. All right. Well, first question, would a judge agree to the stipulation about the dress being unlaundered and say it out loud in a courtroom? I don't believe that.
Yeah, I don't either. I also don't believe that there would be this. I kept pausing it, but there's this like board of the case calendar behind the judge that looks like a departures board at uh-huh. LAX. They actually do have something similar, or they did at the hospital where my dad had a kidney biopsy last year. He's fine, mm-hmm. everyone. For now, knock wood. But that seemed very weird to me that they would leave that in there. So I kept pausing to see if there were familiar names on there, but I couldn't see any.
Mm.
And I also tried to chase down, like, is this actor who plays the creep who owns the dress
someone
significant?
Yeah.
In the show verse. And I couldn't get any joy on that. So if like TV.com or IMDb's pages have been updated since I looked, listeners, feel free to reach out.
Interesting. This is less a question than a comment, but one I know that you will have thoughts on because you've covered her and him in detail. But Tori's swipes at Dean via the character of Nate are hard to ignore. Not that I blame her, but if she's doing this show to make enough money to divorce him, like, good, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of like forgot that the casting of Ivan Sergei was significant for more reasons than, you know, Ivan Sergei's checkbook.
Right. You should say what it is, because we didn't mention that last week.
It was Mother May Sleep with Danger that they were in together, right?
Yep.
Okay. So back when Ivan Sergei was like, going to be the next big thing, thanks to Jack and Jill, LOL. although everybody on that made out pretty good. Amanda Peet.
No, that is true.
Yeah, did okay.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Kirk. But yeah, I'm not sure what that's for, but this is just sort of a general issue that I'm having with the show, which we talked about a little bit last week, which is that this should be a half hour.
Yeah.
Or like sometimes 31 minutes of runtime and 45 minutes somehow. I don't know how they would work that, but
yeah,
some of these subplots that I think are like at the request of the actual cast, or they're trying to work through things like this Kyler thing with Jenny Garth, quote unquote. It's mm-hmm. just a who cares her.
Yeah.
And it's not done realistically enough for me to really be interested in that agita. So this is another aspect of that. I actually keep forgetting to look up what the status is of Tori and Dean's relationship.
I did look it up. They are still married.
Yeah, I think you might be right though.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it's also just that they're the two that we, or she is the one whose personal life we know the most about. I mean, like, as a culture, I don't think anyone knows as much about it as we do, probably.
Yeah, probably.
But, like,
not.
Like, no one knows who Ian Ziering's wife is. No one knows what Gabrielle Garteris's husband does. Like, no one knows that stuff. But she's such a tabloid fixture that maybe she's the one that they felt like we can't depart too much from what people already know. Like, it has to sort of line up with what's happening in real life just because it's been reported so much. But, I mean, I wonder.
Yeah, me too. Or the other answer is that it was an angle into the same way that they used to do with Donna fluffing the Tory character and her sort of underappreciated talents.
Right.
I mean, everyone involved is being a good sport about it. So,
yeah. And to be fair to her, like she has gotten a lot of shows about herself on the air. Like, she knows how to, there's something about this that she does know how to do.
Yeah.
And in this episode, it's like she sort of makes it seem like she's, you know, channeling her father in some way. And sure, but you know, she does know what she's doing. Like, she's gotten this far. So it's just interesting that her portrayal of her husband is like he thinks that she's bullshit, you know.
Well, and I think that the portrayal of her in this is that she thinks he's bullshit to a certain extent also. So,
yeah,
but this is where, like, I understand that the show doesn't want to take a position on how much of the real is real and how real it is.
Right.
I just said the word real so many times that it's lost all meaning. Cool. But this, that can be a problem in terms of like, well, then why are we watching this? Like, where are we in, in the uncanny valley right now? And that leads me to my next question, which is, are we supposed to believe that people can just roll right up to these people's doors and leave these defaced dollies?
Yeah. It does seem unlikely. I mean, in the first episode, or no, I guess it's in this episode that Jason says that he found Jenny's house to go and apologize for their Vegas sexcapades because it was on star maps.
Right.
But these guys aren't all on star maps. And even if they are, like, they have gates.
Well, especially Brian Austin Green and Shay. Like, she's supposed to be a gigantic star. He just opens his back door, which was not locked, and there's a dolly right next to it. I don't think so.
Yeah. These also don't look like the real dolls because I think there weren't dolls of all of them. So they had to make these weird, like, action figure looking things for the purpose of the story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess this is the through line,
I suppose,
with stalker Brian Jr.
That's who you think is doing it.
I mean, I think that's what the show wants us to think. And I
do too, but that, I mean, I guess I shouldn't give it too much credit for coming up with a red herring character and the real one in six episodes, but the fact that it's so obvious makes me think it's someone else. But you're right. Especially if he's angling for this job, like being on the inside would give him access to whatever. Yeah. We have more to discuss, but first we have a message from Charlotte.
Charlotte writes, Jackie is 9 years younger than me, but we grew up closer than sisters. And even now that we live hundreds of miles away, our interests in true crime and pop culture help keep us talking almost daily. Like so many of us, she goes on, our favorite character was Dylan. And when Luke Perry died, we were and still are so sad. Bev Niner was very much one of our first shows to totally bond over. And at her soon to be 44 and my 53 in October, it remains a great signpost along the road of our friendship and sisterhood. Hey, ours too.
But we, very sweet, but we can't help thinking that given the common interests Charlotte mentions, perhaps another signpost along this road might be penitentiary, do not pick up hitchhikers, because the majority of the gang committed offenses that should have gotten them at least some prison time, but of course, nobody did a day.
But in another timeline, they're in the hoosegow for their crimes, and they've got true crime properties devoted to their cases. We've made a list of the five top podcasts, docuseries, and books that might have sprung from, well, gang-related activity.
Nice. Number one, The Executioner's Rave, in which Steve really needs a legacy key when he gets 5 to 10 for 200 counts of reckless endangerment after that house fire.
Number two, Beware the Slender Man 2, Home Invasion, because why didn't that couple press charges on Junkie Dylan for barging in and waving a gun around? It's ridiculous.
Number three, The Thin Bray Line, Brandon is made an example of for drunk driving.
Finally. Number four, Orange Juice is the New Black. No way does a magical drug toilet save David from felony possession time. Come on.
And number five, under the banner of Now Wear This. Look, we actually are fine with Kelly shooting the guy who assaulted her. We'd just like a couple of months in jail for illegal discharge of a firearm to wipe that face off her head.
Indeed. Charlotte, Jackie, enjoy the reboot. And from all of us here at Again With This, happy friendiversary!
And birthdays. And happy birthdays. Everything. Okay, let's break down the episode. Continuity cop. The opening nightmare this time is not Tori's, it's Jenny's. And it has all of her old classmates in the hall listing her most absurd storylines. And they really did a good job. Tara, the street child, being hooked on diet pills, the fire at the party that burns her, when she joined a cult, and when she got shot at LAX, which I feel like that's kind of a deep cut. That was pretty late in the run.
Yeah, not for us, but that was like season eight.
Yeah.
So, well done.
Good job.
Once again, a character is preparing a gigantic salad, but it is Tori, and she does have a squillion children, so it finally plays. But I did make careful note, a cucumber is not involved. So Dave's pet peeve about that particular aspect of Bev Niner salad prep was was not on display.
Let's lead into this one with clip number two.
I don't know if you know, but back in the 90s, I wasn't even allowed to touch my African-American TV boyfriend. I know.
Huh.
Yeah. Jordan. I mean, glad to have a reference to him. He's one of our favorite minor characters, but...
He sure is.
Yeah, it's funny that, like, I wasn't allowed kind of elides, like, who made that decision? Because was it Tori's dad? We don't know who was responsible for that.
Yeah. And, like... I mean, I know they were like dopey and ham-handed about, you know, everything, but that seems like shockingly retrograde even for the early to mid 90s.
Yeah. I was thinking about that because I was working for the book on the episode where Donna goes out on the fake date with Deshaun to make David jealous when he's dating the blind piano teacher. And they realized as I was writing it that there's one interracial kiss in the whole series, and it's the angel girl in Texas.
Oh, God, yeah.
And that was season what, seven?
Yeah.
That was the season seven premiere, I think.
Yes.
So that's like basic, that's getting into the late 90s at that point, I believe.
Yeah, that is absolutely crazy. And there's absolutely no way, I'm sure we talked about this on the podcast devoted to that fake date episode, but there's absolutely no way that if Deshaun were white, they wouldn't have kissed, and then Donna would have been sad because she still loves David. Like,
yeah,
I just assume they didn't do it because they were like, wow, that's actual chemistry.
Oh, yeah,
from a guy who's actually hot.
Yes, that Donna and Deshaun never got together is worse and feels even more like producer interference. Like, it would have been so easy to integrate him, as it were, into the cast by having him like start dating the like main series girls.
Yeah.
What might have been.
Yeah. And I firmly believe that Tori really tried to get that to happen because, hi, Chris Williams.
Yeah. He's a delight. Anyway.
It's Black Lightning, bitch.
For real. So on to the suspension of disbelief. I don't believe anyone would put Brian in a movie, no matter who his wife is, because his wife is Megan Fox and his career is nowhere. So no.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Terminator. Look, he was good in that show, but that was a while ago, right?
It was.
I felt like it was, he was on the cusp of happening again and then it went away.
Yeah, he had that one guest shot on Happy Endings. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, sure. The Sky
he,
Cable.
Like, broke his... Yeah, yeah, right. Yes, exactly. Oof. Also, back to the dolls. Where did... Since we've established they're not the 12-inch that Barbie-type dolls that were actually sold, where did they come from? Like, is the stalker or whoever is messing them up, like, also a Games Workshop enthusiast who like just made them from scratch.
Are we going to start getting served Instagram ads for these actual Fox licensed things that are separate from the original dolls as a merch grab?
Yeah, I mean, I bought a bathing suit a month ago and I'm still getting bathing suit ads on Instagram. So I'm going to say yes. My phone is here in the room with me. It heard everything. So yeah. I'll let you know.
Yeah, we will let you know. Yeah, I just wanted to note that Tori's fridge calendar says lunch at mom's. Okay. Sure.
Maybe it's his mom's.
Yeah.
In Vancouver.
Yeah. Could be. And then Gabrielle Carteris is all offended that Jason Priestley wants her to pull some strings. And she's like, I don't pull strings. Like, That line definitely wasn't inserted in response to allegations that Carteris has been abusing her powers. The president of SAG. Nope. Definitely not. Yikes. Not at all.
Yikes. All right. On to Gen X / your hosts pandering. We get Listen to Your Heart in the hallway at West Beverly and Jenny's Nightmare. Very on trend of for the time that they were actually in high school. So I appreciated that. Also get a reference to something my colleague is quick either to praise or critique on the show. Clip 3.
Drunk cheerleader.
Okay. It's really hard to play a good drunk and I nailed it.
That a girl. Why isn't that line being delivered to Tori or by Tori? I don't know, but I'll take it.
Yep. We also get this in just after Brian's audition for the movie, clip 4.
No, that blew. I didn't connect to the comedy at all. I mean, is this a comedy or is it a drama? This almost reads like it doesn't really know what it is.
I'll share your thoughts with the writer.
We see you, writer's room. Yeah, it doesn't excuse anything, but thank you for that.
No, but it's, I mean, I'll take it.
Yeah, I will also
they know this
it.
Is weird.
Yeah. I also really found it extremely charming. We must have commented in three or four different episodes, usually when there was like a shot of the gang dancing,
or yeah,
minus Brandon, obviously. How much fun Shannon Doherty and Brian Austin Green were clearly having, because they really didn't have that many substantive scenes together.
No.
And then there's a whole scene where he calls her to ask what to do and calls her his, quote, secret best friend. I don't think this is like necessarily actually true in real life, but I think it could be. And yeah. It pleases me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sweet. I noticed that, too. In the last episode, we called this category blondes mean girling, but it's really more like blondes self-fluffing.
Yeah,
what is. We're seeing. So we'll change it to that. We get Tori and Jenny impeccably styled, even for their community service duties, picking up garbage at a park. And I also have to say, anyone else could have also done this with their reflective vests, but Tori zhuzhing hers by tying the tails in the front was like actually a cute detail.
Super cute. I am not hating the styling on this. Gabrielle Carteris has a collection of necklaces drawing the eye down to her still quite impressive front porch that I think is really working. For her and the character.
Her haircut is good too.
Yeah, it is very good. Very flattering. And the eye makeup collecting in the crow's feet is not a problem now, even though it was when she was like 28 on the show. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that was sorted out.
Yep.
People were clowning on Tori for this on Twitter, but her like goth Wimbledon shorts suit that she wears to court, I don't hate it. I thought it was cute.
Yeah.
And I love when Jenny answers the door in that very sort of art deco white butterfly blouse.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Flawless. Yep. She looks great, period, but they're really giving her some enviable outfits. So yeah, the styling is pretty okay. And I have not seen Brian Austin Green in a pair of gigantic pants yet. So
it's true.
Please continue.
His clothes do fit him. We should also mention before we move on from the styling that they've given Christine Elise this very tall coif, she's got a white blonde pompadour and it really suits her.
And she's wearing this Cruella DeVille-esque black cocoon situation, and she's having a fucking ball. It's pretty awesome. She like swoops into the conference room. I'm like, I bet she asked for like 13 takes just to keep doing it. I loved it.
It is funny though. I have to just note, since we're talking about it, that I follow all the opening cast members on Instagram. Hi. So I also am getting updates of what Tiffany Amber Thiessen and Lindsay Price and Vincent Young are all up to during this media blitz, because none of them is involved. Lindsay Price, just in case you were wondering, has been on some great vacations. She was in Santorini with her husband, Craig Stone, the celebrity chef. They also were in Nantucket doing some kind of pop-up thing with Gwyneth Paltrow. So she's fine, guys. Okay. She's fine.
Okay.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen and her husband, who is also an actor, his name is either Brady or Bradley Smith, I forget. But they wrote a children's book that came out earlier this summer, so they've been promoting that. And she's had a lot of content with her kids and still looks amazing, so she's also fine. Vincent Young has made like one movie in the past ever, it seems like, and he just will not stop promoting it. Like the number of times I've seen a very blurry card with like an X in the corner because he doesn't know how to save images off of Google, so he just screenshots them.
Yeah,
he's not doing great, guys. But yeah, it's funny to especially Lindsay and Tiffany seem like it's a little bit pointed, the kinds of stuff that they're Instagramming during this press tour, where it's like, we don't care. I'm sure you don't, but I'm sure you do a little.
Yeah. And while I'm here, please step over to primetimer.com. Her esteemed colleague Joe Reed had an excellent, basically free Tiffany piece last week about why Val should be on the reboot.
Love it.
I mean, agree, but also respect Thiessen being like, you know what? My sanity. I'm into it. I'm going to keep it. Fair enough.
Yeah.
There's a scene in which Jenny is blowing some gold up Tori's culo about how she can keep six little kids alive. Like, I mean, but just because you don't see the multiple nannies that I'm sure are on the premises at all times in various Tori and Dean reality nanigans doesn't mean that they're not there.
No, it's true.
Have to be, because these two people are like, it's not possible for these two idiots to run a zone defense. I just don't think it is. So.
Yeah, but the story for Tori is like she's portrayed as the long-suffering matriarch of the group, not of her family on the show, making everything happen for everyone else without making any demands for herself. And they even have her say that doing the reboot, it has nothing to do with the money, which, LOL. Like, come on. I mean, you can want to do it for love of the game, but like you wouldn't do it for free and whatever. So, yeah, Jenny also, I mean, as I said.
Why do you think we're covering it? Like, why are you so negative about the show? That's what the money is for. Like, look, we all know what we're doing here. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. It can be fun and also be mercenary. They're not mutually exclusive. So,
yeah. Yes. As I mentioned earlier, too, Jenny also describes her time on the show as traumatic, which might be actressy melodrama, but might actually be true for her personally in her real life. So I'm curious to see how that plays out in the Kyler storyline. I think if that is honestly how she feels, I think it could be interesting for the show to explore that.
Yeah, I think that I think it's possible that either the Shannon nanigans were a lot more sort of like intense and hard for other cast members than has been let on. Or other things were happening that she like tried to put in her memoir and she was discouraged from making it. Like, that memoir is, I mean, it's just okay, but it's also like, it's pretty like, not woo woo, but just like very positive and talks about like healing vibes and good energy. And it's possible that she just wasn't in a place to really say some of the shit that happened. And let's face it, in the years since that came out, I think a lot of actresses and women in Hollywood have, you know, revised their sanded down stories of how it's been for them on sets since the beginning of time. So
yeah,
could, like, that's another thing where, like, it can be both, it can be actressy bullshit, but also contain a creative truth. I think it could be both things.
It's true.
So I'm interested to see also what truth we're being led to.
Yeah. Who knew we would be this engaged? All right, let's close it up by naming our MVP. I'm going to say Tori. She actually gets everyone to the table. She pulls it off. Good for her.
Wardrobe.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, least valuable player.
The Shea Green household security team. Guys, you can't pop an edible and fall asleep beside the backyard fountain. People are leaving voodoo dolls. It's not okay.
No. I'm going to say Ian because don't start an MLM, even if it's not an MLM on the show.
Yeah.
The fact that it made it in is like, it's creepy and it's not great.
Well,
so.
And we know you, so... Like, this is your chance to maybe massage that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of product. Okay.
All right. On to our reading from Poor Tori, the Sassy Magazine October 1993 cover profile of Tori Spelling. Where we left off, she had just made her way in, and the reporter, Marianne, was shocked to learn she smokes. Sorry I'm late, she says to her publicist in a tiny, high-pitched voice. She's got on a blue jean sleeveless top, a tight black miniskirt, and motorcycle boots. Oh, 93. She's taller than I had imagined, 5'5", and thin as a pencil. Other than that, she looks like an average 20-year-old. She shakes my hand and sits down, airily scanning the room. Suddenly, Tori says, "Don't look now, there's a bull behind you." I turn around and see a painting of a bull just above my head to the right. "Ha ha," says Tori. "Ha ha," say I. The ice is broken. I ask when she got into acting. She started in her dad Aaron Spelling's shows when she was 6. He produced The Love Boat, Fantasy Island, Charlie's Angels, Vegas, and of course, 90210. I did one line on Vegas and loved it. It was something like, "Can we go ice skating, Uncle Dan?" I had this little red dress on and my front tooth was missing, she says. Tori spent a lot of time hanging around sets, actors, and Hollywood parties. My parents would bring me to these affairs and I'd hide behind my mom, scared to death. People would come up to me and go, "Hi, honey, do you remember me?" And I was always very polite, so I'd go, "Uh-huh." They would go, "What's my name then?" That's so mean to do to a little kid, I'd almost start to cry. That is mean to do to a little kid or anyone.
Seriously.
It's really rude.
Jeez.
All right, let's leave it there.
Next time on Again With This, BH90210 edition, well, the IMDb doesn't have a plot summary, but I can tell you that Carol Potter is listed in the episode cast. Yay! I hope she brings a casserole. Oh, wow. You're right there, Dave. Nice. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can join our gang at the Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is David T. Cole. And we will talk to you next time. Don't get kicked in the nuts.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeperoni.